Netcasting from Chicago, Los Angeles, and Sydney. You're listening to this week's FX Podcast from FXGuide.com.
Thanks for listening to this week's FX Podcast. I'm John Montgomery. Well, we're back from NAB, obviously, at this point, and we appreciate all the feedback that we got regarding our podcasts from NAB in Las Vegas. We did four of them Monday through Thursday, covering a bunch of stuff in the show floor as well as roundtable discussions with other artists. If you didn't hear those, I suggest you can still download those. You can get to the links via our FX Podcast link. That's under the news/discuss tab on our website. If you want to have your podcast downloaded automatically via iTunes, you can, of course, do that as well, and we have links for doing so. One of the things we talked about during the week was the inclusion of effectively Final Touch as color in the Final Cut Studio 2, and Apple's decision to not even raise the price of the Final Cut Studio Bundle. It was quite an interesting development, and of course Final Touch did have a HD res version of it and low res version in addition to something targeted towards the digital intermediate market. But obviously this is going to bring those tools vertically down to a lot more markets than have been available in the past. I mention that because our podcast this week is actually looking at the very high end of digital intermediate, and that's with the DI department at Framestore CFC in London, where Mike and I had the opportunity to drop by and speak with the guys and some of the guys in the department. Now, Framestore CFC has really been a pioneer in helping forge the DI workflow and approaching it from a computer standpoint. They started with, I think it's Chicken Run around the year 2000, have done quite a few films since then, including things like Casino Royale recently, The Queen, and United 93. Now, Framestore CFC doesn't just do digital grading. They also have scanning and recording as well. They've actually been doing it since the 80s as the computer film company before the merger between Framestore and CFC, effectively. Well, why don't we go ahead and join our interview now. When Mike and I were in London, we dropped by Framestore CFC and had the opportunity to speak with senior colorist Asia Scholl, as well as Jan Hoogveld, who's the executive producer there. And we got a little background about where they started and ending up to what they're doing now as part of the digital intermediate department at Framestore CFC.
Yeah, now thanks for letting us come and visit you here in Soho.
Hi.
Firstly, the area that you're in, the digital lab, has been growing pretty massively in the last few years, hasn't it?
It has indeed, yeah. I mean, for us, since about 1999, although we had a very involved past in scanning and recording from the middle of the 80s. CFC was involved in scanning and recording technology. So, yeah, it's been a long time.
Was Chicken Run the first DI that you guys did?
It was the first full DI that we did was Chicken Run, and we started the technology development for that in the middle of 99, and we delivered in 2000.
So, obviously, you've just done the latest Bond film, but before we get on to that, you actually did at least one reel on the last Bond film, am I right in saying that?
That's right, yeah. They came to us with a couple of scenes which they had specific looks in mind for. There was a night attack scene by some special forces in the pre-title sequence. We were also doing the title sequence itself, of course, and then the rest of the first reel.
That was the Korean...
The Korean sort of army camp. And there was also a section of the movie where they, which occurs in Cuba, but it was actually shot in Spain, and it had some weather issues, which we also looked at.
And so between then and now, between, say, 2000 and 2006, there's quite an impressive array of stuff that you've worked on. Can you want to tell us some of the films over the last few years?
Well, very recently we've done, of course, apart from Casino Royale, we've been working on the Hannibal Lecter prequel. We've done two of the Gold films, some smaller films like Brothers of the Head.
Constant Gardner. That was good.
Yeah, great movie, yeah. With a really, really powerful look by César Chalone.
Yeah.
It's a signature kind of look from him.
And other things like, even this year, was United 93 you? Was that?
Yep, United 93, yes.
So obviously a very solid body of work. And tell me, what is the sort of primary gear that you've got set up here now, today?
Now we have three Baselite 8s, we have two Northlight film recorders, two Northlight scanners, three ARRI laser film recorders. We use the whole True Light colour management system, three grading suites with 2K projection. So pretty... what's now become quite standard, but...
Do you use the Spirit 4K at all, or is that just using commercials?
It's 95% of the use on that machine comes from commercials. We don't use it very often. We have used it for scanning 16mm. I think we used it on Last King of Scotland and a couple of other projects that had 16mm material. But, of course, we have 16mm capability on both of the Northlights now, so...
And so in terms of the actual grading environment, you have three theatres, were you saying?
That's right, yeah. Three small screening rooms with 2K JVC projectors and reasonable size screens. They're very similar to lots of other screen rooms I've seen set up for DI. They're fairly standard.
Well, one thing I want to talk to you about was and something significant about Casino Royale, was the idea of this digital mastering initiative and the fact that you guys delivered a digital, the Sony, maybe I've got the name of it wrong, but it's the...
DCI?
Yes.
CapXYZ files for the digital master.
Yeah. Could you explain that for us? Obviously, I need to...
Yeah, but it's the first time we've done it. I was actually speaking to some studio people yesterday about it. It appears it's not as straightforward as it turned out for us. We were quite lucky. We did the maths right, and it worked. We deliver TIFF files, CapXYZ files, which are basically TIFFs, and then they go to a packaging software, DoReMi, forget the QVIS or one of the other systems that basically creates the digital cinema master. So we do the first step from the graded master that we have, which is DPX 2K DPX files. The idea is that those CapXYZ files are device independent. So, providing the device that you're looking at them on is correctly calibrated, those files will always look the same.
So, I mean, just to back up a step for those that aren't familiar, the purpose of doing this is.
It's basically for digital distribution of films.
And so the idea here is that as we move into an age of no longer doing a release print distribution, there needs to be some kind of standard or way for operating. And it seems to be the case that that's starting to get some legs. What's it like here in the London market? Is there much digital projection? I haven't seen any in Leicester Square.
I personally haven't seen many, as you say, except for the Leicester Square. Although when I've been in LA, obviously the lots of movies are screened digitally, certainly a lot more than there are in the UK. There is an initiative here to equip a lot of independent cinemas, I think it's through the Film Council, with projectors. And they presumably will be delivering it with some kind of digital format as well.
So when you said that you had it easy, why was it? Why is it more tricky? And
I don't quite know why people seem to have trouble with it. As I say, we did the maths right and it came out well. Although I have heard reports that it's not as straightforward as it seemed. Of course, you know, every mistake is a learning experience, and unfortunately, we didn't have the learning experience on this one.
So we just
did it right.
So would it be fair to say that you're sort of anticipating that most DIs moving forward will soon get to a point where you're producing both?
I think, definitely, and I think that's now going to be pretty standard that we'll be delivering the DCI master. And
When you're doing DI mastering out, you obviously have the ability to grade per reel, so you can actually put out multiple print-in-egs effectively, so skip the final stage of interpos and interneg. Mm-hmm. Have you done that at all, or is there any demand for that?
Not to the extent that I think that we're delivering every single negative that's going to be used to make distribution prints. I mean, there are examples in the US where they've made a dozen negatives, for example. We haven't done that yet, although we've done three or four, the most we've ever done here. There are some delivery requirements for certain studios now require three negatives. What they are, in fact, usually, though, is an archive negative and one for making your interpos and your internegs.
So I came to you with a film and it was a sensible Hollywood film, obviously not an exception to the rule, but a Bridget Jones Diary type level film. What would be the amount of time I'd expect to have the film in the DI process with you in the digital lab?
Well, we normally, and obviously this varies from job to job, but we normally allow a couple of weeks for the scanning and assembly, which overlap with 2 to 3 weeks of grading, So between, you know, 80 to 150 hours of grading, depending. And then we allow a couple of weeks, a week to 2 weeks to output. Again, that depends very much on schedule. So you can be looking to be in and out in between, you know, 6 to 9 weeks.
But of that, the creative process where you'd expect the director to be here, or the director and the DOP, would be sort of how long?
2 to 3 weeks normally. I mean, most films with any significant degree of grading take 3 weeks to do, so 120 hours.
So let me talk about the environment you're working in. It's primarily a grade to a DPX file. 2K is the sort of standard, is it?
Yeah, we scan on the Northlight film scanner, which currently has a 6K array, so you're subsampling from 6K to 2K. The Northlight 2, I believe, has an 8K array, so that's a bigger subsample, of course. Those 2K files are in DPX format. They are assembled to EDL, so a very straightforward process in the base light. And each reel is given to the colourist individually, and they can go off and grade those reels.
So how does dust busting figure into it, and are you using any of the new technologies for...
Yeah, we have some shiny new technology. We have the Northlight infrared pass. It creates a key of all the dust and dirt on the negative. We then take that key that's been created, that mat that's been created, and we run it through Forge, which is a bit of software that we developed with the Foundry, with Bruno and Simon at the Foundry. The result of that is that you can auto-clean 99% of the dirt.
So this is picking up the fact that dirt at the scanning level is sitting on the film and not, therefore, in the emulsion, so it's not being picked up in the RGB light path.
That's right, yeah. Any dirt will block the infrared pass. Any other degree of density is not going to stop the infrared, so it has to be something solid, i.e. dirt or dust. So that you end up with a key of all of the where all the dirt is on the negative, and then that can be auto-cleaned.
How fast are you actually doing the scanning out? Like, how fast is the process going through?
It's pretty much on the fly. It adds a very, very small amount of time to the scan.
And the post-process done with the Foundry stuff, is that...
It's all done pretty much on the fly.
Oh, so at the same time.
The only time that remains in dust busting now is quality control of the cleaning.
Right.
But the auto clean, so you do have to go through and run through the reel, make sure that you haven't set that too aggressively, for you know.
So imagine I had some fault in a film, like a scratch, some imperfection in the camera that had caused something to happen with the film. Is that handled by your department, or is it spun out to another part of the company?
That's handled by the 2D department that we have within the digital lab. So we have our own dust busting and compositing people who will do titles, scratch repairs, that kind of thing. And I think there are 5 or 6 of them at the moment.
So on, say, The Queen, which had a lot of archival footage, would they have been directly involved in helping to bring that into the pipeline? Or
They didn't on that particular occasion, I don't think. Yeah, because most of it was video. It was just converted and brought in.
Right, So what sort of work are they doing? You said some title work, but you've also got a design department here, haven't you?
The design department's a slightly separate entity. They do a lot of menus for DVDs, titles, all kinds of design work. We will tend to liaise with them when there is a need for a title sequence or whatever.
So I interrupted you. So we've got the processing, we've done the dust busting, we've got the stuff through, and then is there a need to do higher than 2K scan? I mean, there must be for, you know, a whole lot of effects work.
Occasionally we do, of course, yeah, for visual effects, and as and when they request it, we will do that. In terms of DI, we've had a lot of tests come in. We've had a lot of people who are very curious about it, a lot of people who want to know how quickly and cheaply and how effectively we can do 4K work, but the reality is that no one has actually decided to spend the money on doing it so far. I think one of the bottlenecks in the pipeline is not so much the grading of the drama and the digital intermediate, but actually the visual effects guys who have to render 4K, everything at 4K, and that's more of a bottleneck, or certainly more of a cost.
So obviously when you're going to now output that with the ARRI lasers that you mentioned earlier, an absolutely critical stage in this is calibrating the loop to get a tight correspondence between what's happening with the film and the labs. What's the lab situation here in London? What are the main labs, and how do you make sure that there's parity between what you're doing and what they're producing with an egg?
Well, we work with three labs, as we have done for probably over 20 years now. In fact, there are four. There's a small lab called Bucks, but the main labs we use are Soho Images, Deluxe, and Technicolor, of course. Every week, if not more often than that, we send in wedges which are calibrated, and so we're constantly checking the loop on the film recorders. As far as each project goes, we will calibrate for the, you know, the print stock that people are going to use, the lab they're going to use. We do side-by-side tests at the beginning of each job to make sure that everything's completely calibrated. So, you know, it's an ongoing process. We haven't just set it up and left it and walked away. You know, it's a continual struggle to keep all of the variables that are involved in DI.
Including analog chemicals.
Yeah, analog chemicals. And also things like, you know, projector lamps, you know, making sure the rectifiers are all working correctly. There are dozens and dozens of small factors that need to be taken into account.
Does that mean that you get to a point that you're not having to do much film out and that everyone's just comfortable working in the digital projection that you're seeing in the three cinemas? Or is there still a desire to see a fair amount of film out test stuff?
We normally include 10% of the running time of the film as confidence tests or, you know, sort of grading development outputs or look development outputs. People still tend to use them, but I don't think it's a confidence issue anymore. People like to use them to actually create a look and to test looks. Some people like to, in the past, people have shot out one single frame from every single shot, just to get an impression of how the reel is going. Other people like to shoot specific scenes which they feel are going to be problematic. Often the colourist, I'm sure Ace can fill you in on this, often the colourist will advise that certain colours or light is going to cause a problem, so we'll test those. There still is a technical challenge there, which is getting the gamut that we're dealing with in the projector to match film gamut. So not all colours correspond at all times. So it's a tricky bit of science, really.
Maybe we should switch tacks now to Acer and have a chat to him about some of the more creative issues and how they are backed up by the technical ones we've discussed. So, what do you think about what we've been discussing? Is that true, that you find that the colours are a good match and that the process is really well, providing you creatively with what you're expecting to see in the cinema?
Yeah, no, they're a fantastic match. When I came into DI a few years ago, we were using monitors, and calibration was very close, but you had the big difference between size of a monitor, image on a monitor, and going up to a sort of 20, 30-foot screen.
Because it's like there's peripheral vision issues there as well, isn't there? Like how it plays out on a big screen.
Yeah, and like Jan was saying, we take our projectors down to the cinema, do side-by-side with film outs. Usually sort of 10 or 20 different images from a film are held for 10 or 15 seconds. So we've got a long time to look at them and tweak them. And the tools in the TrueLight calibration array to do lots of very fine adjustment for that.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, we're talking about projected light that's reflective. And of course, the way black is dealt with is fundamentally different between, incidental light and stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot of work we did recently on almost making our own pluge or very dark black level bars to really see what low lights are happening between our digital projector and the film projector. And with it, again, within TrueLight, you can play with contrast and flare settings. Because, there's nothing worse than spending time with a DP on a scene and going down and it not being the same or not having the contrast or the bite, and you want to reproduce it as closely as possible.
So tell me, what project have you been working on recently?
It's Hannibal Rising, which is the young Hannibal Lecter film.
Which is a perky film.
Yes, a happy film.
Cheery.
It's quite gritty. The first 15 minutes of the film were bleach bypass on the original camera negative.
Oh, really? At the lab?
At the lab, with a very, very good and brave DOP, Ben Davis, who we worked with before on Layer Cake. And he really gets bleach bypass right.
Right, because Layer Cake was one of your entire DI films, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was the first one I did, which was shot CinemaScope originally, which we get kind of a couple of CinemaScope films a year shot that way, not many. but he's very keen on it. I did the whole DI for that, which is on a monitor. So this time he was back, first time he's come back with a projected film, which we had a great time doing. And to pick up on what Jan was saying earlier, with DOPs we've had before that come the second or third time, we shoot less and less out for them the second time. And they've totally got that confidence it's going to reproduce.
So I'm really keen to discuss with you about the creative process. You're on a film and you're going to have a period with the creative, you know, that's primarily focused on the creative of the film. And it's a lot of technical stuff, I know.
Yeah.
How do you approach it? Do you like to just start working up a look? Do you prefer to work with just the DOP, then the director, both at once? Do you prefer to have everyone there all the time? That would change per client, your preference?
It does change. Well, if time is short, if you've only got, say, 2, maybe 3 weeks on a film, you do want to get everyone in agreement as quickly as possible. So in that way, it's good to get a director and DOP in at least for the first couple of days, or to get a good review of a couple of reels done in the first few days, because you can do an enormous amount of work in fine detail on something, and then 2 weeks down the line, if producer or director sees it, they want to make a big change, you kind of, you know, you can do it, but it's a shame you've spent lots of time on a different look.
So you're sort of setting the looks for key scenes. Would that be an ideal way to work?
Yeah, on something like Constant Gardener, there were three very distinct looks for a backstory, so flashbacks, the kind of diplomatic world, which was sinister, we went for a khaki green look, and the very colourful African world. Mm. The African world was based on some images from books that that DOP had found, shot in the slums where they shot, where kids, street kids, were given cameras and went out and just did pictures, and so the kind of colour of purples in the shadows and things were a real palette. On something like Hannibal Rising, it's a film noir look, so the DOP said he wanted me to look at things like LA Confidential and other films of the kind of with that period. And on that film, I suggested a kind of slight soft filter, which we keyed into Gong Li's face as a kind of stalking look, as you would have in a film noir.
So that's all just a post-process.
Yeah.
They try to shoot, presumably, fairly clean.
Very clean,
And was there any consideration given to... because it's film noir, there's going to be a lot of blacks.
Yeah.
How are you handling that?
A couple of ways. He'd shot it, as the story goes more and more through, with stronger and stronger black shadows. But he actually lights quite soft lighting on faces. It got more stark as it went through, because that was the look. But Ben always delivers very good detail in the blacks. His exposure is excellent. But what we might do if the blacks are heavy is key blacks and lift them, or play with the curves you can now play with in base light. So you can actually put pivots in different parts of the curve to lift detail just above the blacks or in different areas. And of course you can key into faces and eyes and lift those independently and track those at the same time.
So on Constant Gardener, you are doing what I would call scoring the film with the colour grading. You know, it's really like... In the same way that music is scoring to the beats. So I guess the question is, does that require you, if you're especially working on some kind of character arc or story arc, to be working in a linear fashion from reel one to the back, or is it just that you know the material so well you can just jump around?
Well, you do tend to work usually from front to back, because that's usually the way it's been scanned, and you have to start grading on reel one before maybe reel five or six has been scanned. I almost always get to read the script before, and quite often now, because we may advise on what's being shot, we might talk to people a year in advance and maybe talk about how certain things could be shot, like day for night scenes. And then I'll usually see a cut on an Avid before I start working and talk with them beforehand, so I kind of know where everyone thinks the story's going to go and what the look developer might be. On United 93, we started the story very documentary style, because it was very much...
But with some killer footage at the beginning that was like... I mean, that was like... the ground stuff on that film before they got on the plane wasn't particularly... how can I put this? Easy.
Which parts?
Well, a lot of... There was a lot of effects work because, the early stuff that was shot in the UK, if I'm not mistaken, looked nothing like what they wanted, and so they had to replace a lot of stuff.
They did. They shot a lot of stuff. In fact, while I was grading, the DOP flew twice to the States to get shots of a United plane taking off in the right direction on a sunny day.
And yet, you know, your stuff had to look 100% real, because there was a film that relied on it wanting to be very true to life.
Well, it did. It started off very real and stays that way, but in the last sort of half an hour of the film, we actually slowly increase the contrast shot to shot to shot, so that by the end it's very much more high contrast and saturated than before, when everyone's just sitting on the plane before the hijack's taken place. So there's a huge creative kind of effect going on that's meant to be fairly subliminal, but when you actually compare shots from the sort of fourth to fifth reel, there's a massive difference.
That's really interesting, because that's, I mean, it's the sort of thing that is almost, as an audience member, hard to perceive, because you are in the story, right? And especially that one, which was like horrendously upsetting given the real nature of it. It's always that much harder to dismiss something when it's fiction versus fact. But I was just wondering, from your point of view, when you're working, do you get to consult at all on the stocks that the DOP is using? And if so, what stocks you like, and is it just horses for courses?
Like, no, it depends what they want. We did on the Libertine, we looked at lots of different stocks with them, and bleach bypass processors and various things, and they wanted a very grainy, dirty look to the film, lifted blacks but lots of grain. And so the considerations of other things, like at the moment we're doing some testing on Super 16, something shot in Africa, and going, well, you know, the 50D, please, smallest grain you can get, it's lovely, we can push it more than any other if we need to. But with that, I think, you know, there was a completely different consideration for the look. So it does change, but we do really like to get involved as early as possible. There are less surprises at the other end.
And at the other end of the process, when you're outputting, you're obviously, we've been discussing this in terms of just grading for cinema, but it would be naive to deny the fact that the film is going to be seen by half its audience off either DVD or television.
Yeah.
What considerations are given to that?
What we do, usually just before the end of the, say, three-week grade, is we'll, through the baselight, we'll look at the whole film on an HD monitor, through True Light again, so exactly how we would play it out to our HD department for them to do their pan and scan deliverables. And we will change the grade on that with the DOP if necessary. Usually there's small changes on just certain scenes, but yeah, we do.
Have you had any sort of serious grading changes when moving between those two? The only thing I can imagine is there's some kind of like problem with
crushing
it too much, or?
Maybe those are the ones, very dark night scenes, you want to make sure you've got detail, you know, in the shadows, you're not crushing anything, so those would be the ones that we'd look particularly closely at. But then we'd probably look at those very closely on film as well.
Is your HD master a 10-bit master, 444, or is it...
Yeah, we're now turning to master on HD Cam SR, which is RGB 444, the last few. Which has worked very well, which was how Flyboys came into us, which was on... they shot on Genesis.
Well, they shot Genesis on that, didn't they? And so that was analogue files.
Yes.
Now, I know a lot of the film was heavily effects work, but were you dealing with the panelogue files, or had it been cross-converted?
No, we dealt with them raw, as it were, panelogue straight in, conformed into the base light.
Did you have presets for that, or was that something you had to develop a lot of stuff on?
We developed as we went, again, playing with the curve. I mean, I visited location a couple of times to look at that, and they were very new to it, and it was a steep learning curve for us. Mm. And a very interesting grade, because we changed the grade three or four times as we went through. Mm. We started off with a low contrast sepia kind of look for what everyone thought war films looked like, and in the end went for quite a high contrast, colourful sort of real look.
And that film was on a pretty tight schedule. Was your schedule sort of crunched?
It usually is. I'm just trying to think. We actually had about sort of 6 or 7 weeks for grading on that. So grading-wise, it was good. We did have to deliver HD previews during that, and that's something that's happening more and more now. Even before we start the film grade, we might do an HD preview grade, or halfway through, and then recuts would come back to us. So the actual grading process sometimes is in several parts.
Just finally, when you get to go to a cinema and sit down and watch, do you feel like it's now... I mean, is it adequate, the cinema experience for you, or are you really feeling like the punter, as it were, that's going to the cinema is not getting what you're seeing? I'm not talking about technical now, I'm just talking about, you know, the quality of projection and the fact that it's a domestic cinema.
Yeah, it varies. I know some good cinemas, and I try and see films the minute they come out to see a good print. When we get prints in our cinema, it's fantastic, because it's really clean. But yeah, it is a different viewing experience, and I think, you know, digital projection when it comes in and when it's, you know, the same everywhere, and when you have the right illumination. It's like, it's the same kind of thing that's happened with sound over the past 5-10 years, that sound in most cinemas is now spectacular.
I must say, jokingly, that we went and saw the latest Bond film, which was magnificent, but we saw it here at the Odeon, I think it is, in Leicester Square, which cost like a phenomenal amount of money. I mean, now it's very good sound when we think of it, right? And it was a good viewing experience. But yeah, it was bizarre to me to be in such a big cinema with such a big throw in a packed house, of course.
Yeah.
Audience loved it.
No, I mean, I think that's the main reason you keep going. I love going to the cinema for the packed experience. And usually go buy the DVD afterwards to watch at home anyway. But you're right, some cinemas you could have each bought a DVD for the price you go in for. I don't know how many punters will feel or see the difference with digital projection from one day to the next. It'd be really interesting to ask. We do straight away, like we do with new prints.
I mean, it's that thing, isn't it? If you can get to see a print where the throw has been calibrated to the light levels properly, and, as you said, it's at the beginning of the run before it's, like, torn to shreds, yeah, it's a vastly different experience.
It is.
Yeah. Look, thank you so much for taking time to talk to us. Thank you both for letting us come in and visit you here in Soho. And we look forward to seeing what you're working on next.
Okay.
Well, thanks, guys, for that. Thanks for taking the time to speak with us. Again, the folks at Framestore CFC were really kind to us during our visit in London, and we appreciate that. And it was great hearing some behind-the-scenes details about the department there. It was really great to be able to have the opportunity to sit down with them and actually take a look at some of their work as well. Well, that's it for this week at FX Guide. Be sure to drop by our forums if you have any questions. Be sure to drop us a line via email if there's something that you'd like to listen to or have us cover as part of our podcast or in an online story on the site. So for Jeff Huser and Mike Seymour, I'm John Montgomery. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to this week's FX Podcast. Please let us know if you have any suggestions for stories or future podcasts. You can reach us by using the Contact Us links at the top of the homepage. This podcast is copyright 2006 FX Guide LLC. Broadcast or redistribution is prohibited without the expressed written consent of FX Guide LLC.